Welcome to this special edition of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, Associate Editorial Director with Neurology Live, and today I have a breaking news story. On Friday, January 6th, the FDA approved lecanemab, a humanized IgG1 monoclonal antibody that binds with high affinity to amyloid beta-soluble protofibrils for the treatment of patients with early-stage Alzheimer's disease. Marketed as Leqembi by Eisai, it becomes just the second anti-amyloid therapy approved, joining aducanumab, or Aduhelm, which earned approval for Biogen in June 2021. Dr. Billy Dunn, the director of the Office of Neuroscience in the FDA's Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, said in a statement that Alzheimer's disease immeasurably incapacitates the lives of those who suffer from it and has devastating effects on their loved ones. This treatment option is the latest therapy to target and affect the underlying disease process of Alzheimer's instead of only treating the symptoms of the disease. Shortly after the FDA decision, Neurology Live spoke with Dr. Sharon Cohen, a behavioral neurologist and the medical director of the Toronto Memory Program at the University of Toronto, as well as a trial investigator for lecanemab, and she provided her perspective on the approval. Here's Dr. Cohen with her immediate thoughts on the data.
With the FDA's latest approval of lecanemab on Friday, last Friday, what we see here is very consistent results with an anti-amyloid therapy used in early symptomatic stages of Alzheimer's disease, and it builds on the prior aducanumab data. So it shows us in a more consistent way that we can impact the underlying biology of the disease. We can clear amyloid, which is the earliest bad actor that we can identify in this disease. We can clear it substantially with lecanemab, and we see clinical benefit. We see slowing of disease. And in the case of lecanemab, the FDA used the phase 2 study for the accelerated approval process. They will use the phase 3 data, which has already been presented and published, for the full approval process, which we're very hopeful about. But we see significant disease slowing, not modest, moderate degree of slowing in cognition, in day-to-day function, reduced caregiver burden, improved quality of life or less declining quality of life in people who are living in the community and still largely independent despite their diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. We haven't seen that before. And now two drugs, one building on the other, showing similar but more consistent effects. So I think this is a pivotal time for our field.
Similar to its predecessor, aducanumab, lecanemab was greenlit via the accelerated approval pathway, with the application supported by data from the Phase 2b proof-of-concept clinical trial known as Study 201. The pivotal Phase 3 Clarity AD trial is anticipated to provide supplementary data and is still pending review by the FDA. In July 2022, when the FDA officially accepted and granted priority review to the BLA for lecanemab, the company claimed it would submit an application for traditional approval of the drug to the FDA, and it did so late on Friday night. Here's Dr. Cohen with her perspective.
So the FDA has granted conditional approval based on the accelerated pathway, and with that conditional approval, without confirmatory data, the FDA could withdraw its approval, and also funding bodies like CMS have opted at this point not to fund anti-amyloid drugs that are approved conditionally or via the accelerated pathway. So Eisai has turned around very quickly and submitted the phase 3 data already late last week, just immediately following the accelerated pathway approval, to request full traditional approval. And what that means is, if they're successful and the FDA grants full approval, that we don't have this tenuous situation where approval could be withdrawn, and we have a much, much greater opportunity to have insurers fund the drug so that it can be much more available and accessible to patients.
Notably, some questions remain about the access to anti-amyloid therapies like lecanemab. In April 2022, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, published its final decision memorandum on national coverage analysis for the class of monoclonal antibodies as treatments of AD, restricting the coverage of these two products to two scenarios. The first provided coverage for approved agents that show change in surrogate endpoints in randomized controlled trials conducted under an investigational new drug application, while the second provides coverage in a CMS-approved prospective comparative study scenario. Here's Dr. Cohen with a little more context on what this means for lecanemab.
Well, there will be some waiting and seeing, but meanwhile, Eisai has had very constructive conversations with CMS to explain why this broad decision they made not to cover accelerated pathway approval for the whole class of monoclonal antibodies is not as sound as, you know, it may have seemed originally. The role of accelerated pathway approval is to make a drug more accessible, not less accessible. If it looks promising and it can help people, especially in a progressive disease, you don't want people to have to wait. So there are constructive discussions going on. They've been going on for a while and will continue to go on. And meanwhile, the FDA will do its review of the phase 3 data. So I think both things are going to play out at the same time.
The supporting phase 2 study, study 201, which was a Bayesian-designed clinical trial, randomly assigned 856 patients with early Alzheimer's who had a confirmed presence of amyloid pathology to either lecanemab at multiple doses or placebo, identifying the 10 mg per kilogram biweekly dose as the effective dose, achieving at least 90% of the maximum treatment effect. At the end of the 18-month treatment period, the 10 mg per kilogram biweekly dose reduced brain amyloid by a mean of 0.306 standardized uptake value ratio units from a baseline mean of 1.37. Additionally, the treated group had a 76% probability of achieving 25% less decline on the primary endpoint, which was the change on the Alzheimer's disease composite score compared with placebo. Safety, particularly events of ARIA, have become a major topic of discussion among this class of medications, and for lecanemab, recent news of patient deaths have become a talking point this winter. All told, there were 3 patient deaths throughout the study, including one that was reported in early January, just before the decision. Dr. Cohen provided some context to us on the instances for the clinical community, so here's her again.
And it's important that the community at large understand that we take deaths and adverse events very seriously within trials, and I know that Eisai does as well. So any death or serious event is reviewed carefully in terms of, attribution. Is it caused by the drug? Is it caused by a variety of factors or something completely unrelated to the drug? What we know from the large phase 3 study is that there were no deaths related to ARIA in people on lecanemab. There was one fatal hemorrhage in a person on placebo. And we do see hemorrhage infrequently, but we do see it as part of Alzheimer's disease. And so it's important that people understand that in Alzheimer's disease, the vessels are leaky. We can have hemorrhage, and that does occur rarely in the disease without any treatment, without any lecanemab or other anti-amyloid. We also see microhemorrhage, often asymptomatic, but not infrequently. We see these little spots of bleeding in the brain in people with Alzheimer's just by virtue of having Alzheimer's disease. So the question is, adding lecanemab, based on the propensity for bleeding in the brain, does that enhance bleeding? Only a very, very small amount. And so if you can get benefit and slowing of disease with only a very slight increase in risk of bleeding, many patients will feel, hey, this is Alzheimer's, I'll take that risk. Others will say, no, that's not for me. So an informed discussion is very important. Mm-hmm. With the 3 deaths that were reported, and there's been a lot of hype about it, it's really important that clear information comes out. One of the individuals was on an anticoagulant that has its own risk of bleeding and was a person who has falls. That also, if you're on an anticoagulant and you hit your head, you get more bleeding. Now, they were in the open label extension, so they were also on lecanemab, but it's not clear to me that it was entirely lecanemab. You know, they had other reasons for bleeding in the brain. The second patient reported, and reported in a very dramatic way, was one who had a stroke. She was also in the open label lecanemab study, had gotten all the way through to the open label extension. And she had a stroke, not due to lecanemab, and was given a clot busting drug, TPA, which has a 6% risk of causing bleeding. And when you bleed from TPA in the brain, there's about a 45% chance that that bleed will be fatal. So to say that lecanemab caused that, to me, is not credible. You know, she was given a clot busting drug, which itself could have caused the bleed. Did lecanemab contribute to that? Is that combination unsafe? We're trying to figure that out, and nobody wants to be dismissive here. The third case, again, somebody in the open label extension on lecanemab. We don't have all the details. I believe they were on anticoagulant as well. And Eisai is trying to get the details before we get in this hype about, you know, blaming the drug versus blaming something else. Let's get the medical information. So we don't know yet. I think that the information's important. We need to lay it out in a scientific manner and not let it play out in the media. Unfortunately, that's what happens with some of the drama in drug development, and that doesn't serve our patients or our community well. But there will be appropriate use guidelines being developed to guide treating physicians to use lecanemab in the safest possible way. And there may be patients, for example, on anticoagulants or who have the genetic genotype of two copies of APOE4, who may be at higher risk of bleeding. And therefore, that, you know, risk-benefit discussion has to happen between clinician and patient. And that will ensure that we keep people safe.
For more coverage on lecanemab's approval, you can check out the corresponding links in the show notes or head to neurologylive.com. Additionally, more coverage of Alzheimer's disease and dementia can be found on our Alzheimer's disease and dementia clinical focus page. Thanks for listening to this special episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. We'll be back this Friday with our regularly scheduled episodes.